At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Bingetown TV. This is Brian here with Luke, Paul, and producer Dave. And today, we're going to be covering Netflix's The Sandman. Today's going to be episodes 7 and 8, entitled The Doll's House and Playing House, respectively. And the big story here is the Vortex. What is it? And Corinthian? Comma the confirmed.
Thank you for pointing that out.
Confirmed. Let's clear the air right there. But before we get into this, I do once again want to shout out the official Reddit community of The Sandman. It is our Sandman. Good dialogue there. And they are friends of the pod for sure. So what do you think, guys? Episode 7 and 8. Pretty good.
Well, first, can we just shout out to the fact that this is our first recording all together for The Sandman pod? So I'm hyped about that. But
hi, guys. Hi.
Hello. Hey, PD.
I usually look at Luke anyway, but now I can actually look at Pete Thomas and Paul.
But talking about the episodes themselves, I don't know about you guys, but just how we were talking about the ratings on our last pod, these were always supposed to be the two lowest rated episodes, and it was a huge drop off from the highest rated episodes. So my expectations were a little bit lower, but I walked away totally enjoying these episodes. They were way different, not as good, but definitely still really good.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. Episode 6 will still hold the reins of being the best episode for me. 7 and 8 were very enjoyable. They probably fall back in that category of like episodes 1 and 2, still very enjoyable to watch. Mm-hmm. Just a lot more unanswered questions still that we're getting, especially with the Vortex, like what she's actually capable of. To me, it seems like her powers are almost like identical to Dream's. But that's just me. Overall, though, still very much love these episodes. The show just continues to have me just kind of sucked in, watching every moment. Like, we got to the end of episode 8 and I almost just got right into 9, but then I forgot about the podcast, so I had to pause that. So they were good.
Yeah, I don't know if it was because I knew these two episodes were the quote unquote lowest rated in the series going in, but I thought they were definitely better than what I was expecting. I thought they were, again, we say it every time, but I'm saying it again, the world building. Fucking WB is fucking out of this world. It's great. I love it. We got what Dave was saying. We got a bunch more questions, but at the same time, we got a few answers to some things. The first one that comes to mind is literally just Dream talking about, you know, the limits of him intervening with humanity or not. So
that's for Endless, all the Endless too.
Yes, exactly. So I love that shit. Like, inject that into my veins. Like, if there was a rule book, oh my God, I would be the happiest guy ever. So it's just so good, and I'm so excited for how they just teed this up for the last two episodes here. Mm-hmm. Also, I just want to say, the news broke this morning. As of when we're recording this, the news broke this morning that Netflix actually dropped bonus content, two more episodes for The Sandman, and we couldn't be more hype and frustrated that we can't watch it at the same time. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, that's good for you guys listening, because then you get at least one more episode from us of recording and talking of The Sandman. So I'm looking forward to those episodes. I don't know, and I haven't heard anything about them. Like, I don't know if they're directly related to the story, if they're supposed to be side stories.
I'm trying to block it on all the social media.
You know what's funny, too, is I saw on Twitter is Neil Gaiman, who's the writer of the original Sandman comics, tweeted something last night saying, oh, something. It was something along the lines of, oh, the worst part about Netflix's season one salmon is there's only 10 episodes.
Oh,
and
oh my God.
That dropped this morning and it was just like, everyone's like, all right.
I got one spoiler. I'm not going to say, but it is an appearance from an actor in one of the new episodes that just dropped. And I couldn't be more excited to see how he gets involved in this world.
You said he, I thought it was going to be Joanna.
Oh shit.
I wanted more Joanna.
That was a spoiler.
My bad.
I guess I'll comment 7-8. Yeah, I agree with you guys. I don't know how these are perceived as the lowest. I guess some episodes have to be the lowest in any season, of course, but I was pretty interested in what Rose has going on, them establishing the vortex, and I thought it was a great episode 8 for the Corinthian. Like, they just showed how just terrifying he is. So I was really into these episodes.
Were these the darkest episodes you would say we've gotten so far? I think
darkest?
the whole Jed story was out. Like really fucked up.
More than the diner?
I was going to say end of episode 5 and the diner scene.
But we have been getting a lot darker than I will say. Things have been steadily just getting more and more evil, especially with the introduction of the one sibling who was like cutting her face. Despair. Yeah, it was so creepy. We'll get there when we get there.
Which is right now.
Yeah.
Let's start and let's just start breaking down the doll's house. This one works out pretty cleanly in four main buckets of character grouping. So let's just go right into Desire's bucket because we're back in Desire's gallery. And as Dave's saying, we meet Despair. And wow, Despair is not what I expected at all. I guess she's into just self-harm and that's part of it, which makes total sense. But the thing that really caught my ear is that Despair and Desire, the twins who have been referenced constantly, share a realm. That's both of theirs.
We literally commented, somebody said it, I think it was you, B. Thomas, last episode said, do you think, you know, Destiny and Despair share a realm?
We all said we hope not.
And so, I was like, dude, they wouldn't do that. They
get their own realms. And we were totally wrong.
Also, that was another thing we were wrong on. I said Destiny and Desire would be twins. It's Despair and Desire.
Hmm.
And I'm not sure if you guys,
I might have got that wrong too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So Destiny is the only confirmed sibling that we have no sight of yet.
Correct. We've seen Desire, Despair, Death,
Dream,
and Dream, and then we haven't seen Destiny yet.
Okay. But yeah, this is just a free for all because this is the opening scene to episode 7. Anything else you guys want to bring up about this?
The only thing I'll say is that was definitely, are we all on the 100% page that we think that was the same person Desire was talking to at the end of episode 6?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep.
Wasn't sure if maybe we would have some discussion on potentially
alternatives.
Yeah, alternatives.
Well, it's confirmed not the prodigal.
Oh, that's what I was going to bring up. That was the biggest takeaway I got from that conversation was Despair going, the prodigal? And the Desire being like, no, dude, he's still missing.
He too.
Yes.
Yeah. So prodigal is a guy. So theorizing in the future, just be on the lookout. Question any also, guys you're seeing.
Yeah. Also, Desire is like trophy room, if you want to call that. Like what they were saying, it almost seems like he had like trophies hanging up in those little.
It's the gallery.
Yes.
Someone else's helm. Definitely.
That's what I took it as, was definitely someone else's mask.
Super cool. And it goes along with Desire. Like, right?
This scene continued the trend of seeing Desire in every single of the last four episodes, I think. Usually we get the ending scene being Desire's queuing us up like as the main bad character for the series. And I think that's still where we're going. But we get some insight into Desire's plans here. And we pretty much guessed all of this. It wasn't that unguessable about how Desire set up Burgess and he was a distraction. And that was all connected with getting Dream there. Still no confirmation on my theory about the Corinthian being involved in Desire's plans, but that was awesome. And then we also get some insight into Desire's kind of intentions and goals of why they're doing what they're doing, right? Like they're saying that what was Desire getting at, right? That Dreams and like Dream thinks he's better than that.
Dreams are manifestations of Desire and Despair, which is kind of true. Dreams are just what you desire in the waking world, and nightmares are what bring you despair. So that logic tracks. What he's acting on is not appropriate.
And Desire was saying, like, he keeps saying that he thinks his realm is better than our realm.
Yeah.
And like, who is he to say that? So definitely seems a little bit bitter about.
And that kind of tracks with Death's conversation she has with Dream in the last episode about, oh, we didn't have her Desire didn't have her, the sparring partner at the family dinner. Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. So Desire seems to be very jealous of Dream. And I don't even know if Dream cares. I think this could just be a complete just like overthinking on Desire's part, and that, and it's turning Desire into a villain.
Yeah. I guess we just need to see them interact.
Yeah. Any other comments?
I'm good.
Okay. So let's get into everything that happens in the dreaming for this whole episode, because we're going to leave Rose for next, because Rose's storyline is pretty integral and it's important for this and next episode. So in the second bucket, it kind of picks up with bringing Abel back into the story, which was cool. We got to see Lucien interact with Abel. We get to hear about these rumors of the dream vortex in the dreaming itself. Then we go back to the throne room and we talk with Dream. And this is one of the best scenes ever when they talk about the three missing arcana, aka the nightmares. I think they're all nightmares. Yeah. And then
major arcana.
Yeah. Sorry. And then it ends with the scene with Lucien, Matthew, and Merv the pumpkin. So those three scenes, we can just freeball talk about whatever you guys want to bring up.
Sorry. Starting with Lucien doing the census, going to Abel.
That was the first part of this.
Well, I guess this is the most logical point to bring up my theory that I texted you guys in the chat that I connected. We were questioning who Lucien and Abel are with respect to, I don't know, Gregory the Gargoyle, who is clearly a dream. They seem to be more real than dreams. And I suggested that maybe they were part of the fairy delegation that Dream referenced in 1589. I like that theory a lot. It kind of explains the pointy ears that Lucien has.
Absolutely. And especially if they don't have their own world, or if something happened to it, it would make sense that they're kind of scattered as they are, like these characters are, and looking for people to kind of rely on or serve, kind of thing.
I feel good about that for Lucien more than I do Cain and Abel. I'm not exactly sure what their deal is, but they could be.
Do you guys think when Lucien was taking the census and Abel was talking about all the living things there, and he was saying like unspeakable horrible things in the basement, is that going to come into play, or is that just more craziness? Because I would love for,
I feel like they're establishing the House of Mysteries and Secrets so much that we're going to go inside them at some point.
I mean, this is like the second like big reference where it was like a few lines of dialogue are dedicated to the two separate ones. So I don't know if like he's Dream's gonna trap Corinthian in the basement of the House of Mysteries or something like that, like with the unspeakable horrors, and like that's the way he deals with him or whatever.
It's definitely coming back. There's no way that they've referenced the House of Mysteries and Secrets this many times for them not to.
Seems like a show where they just like planting seeds to harvest whenever the fuck they feel like it. So
many seeds.
Yeah. So man, I'm glad that they're giving themselves the freedom and giving us the opportunity to dream and theorize. I did not think we were going to have 5 points on that one scene of Lucien taking the census. Yeah. But the coolest scene that I think you described is when she is listing the three major arcana, watching the stained glass mirrors rearranged to, and the three that she lists are Galt, who is a shapeshifter who has questionable morals, as Lucien says, and I trust her judgment. The Corinthian, confirmed. Yep. The Corinthian.
Trust me, bro. All caps in my notes. Right. The Corinthian.
And Dream immediately is just like, well, no surprise there. And the other one was the green tree.
The Fiddler's Green.
And both of them said that was a little bit curious that he would have left, because it seems like he was sovereign over his own land. He was like a fancy word, vavasor, I believe, which is a vassal underneath a higher vassal. So, and those are the three major arcana that are missing, which I guess is noteworthy even for the endless that they're gone.
And his image on the stained glass windows, it just seemed to be almost a forest. It wasn't like a being, and almost seems to be like a whole entity. Is like that's the vibe that I got.
I didn't think it was. When you kept saying referring to Fiddler's Green as a person, I took it as a place. Mm-hmm. Like this was a dreaming place in the real world. Like the
that room. Actually just clicked right now that potentially could be what's going on with Hector and Lyta. Do you know what I'm talking about? Like
yes,
that whole,
because
the background, yeah,
yes.
The whole background is that.
Oh, good theory. Okay, okay. I like that.
That could totally be it. And
I thought of it first.
Yeah, I clarified it.
I hope that's what it is.
And that makes even more sense. Yeah, yeah. I mean, did good he stuff. Specify that the major arcana are all nightmares? Or is he kind of hinted, or was it kind of implied that that Fiddler's Green was
there,
a
dream? I think
he said all nightmares.
I think that was the result of the census saying they're not here anymore. I don't think Lucien specified that they were nightmares.
I guess that's true. Yeah. There are three entities of the dreaming that are missing from the realm.
Two of them.
Which would make more sense why he was so shocked and like actually like,
yeah.
Yeah. But wait, did we say the number?
Blown away.
Me too. It was only 11,062 people were there. And then we find out at the very end of episode 8 that pretty much everyone is back.
I mean, yeah, I don't know if that is everyone or there's a bunch more that came back. But either way, I was expecting Lucien to be like, all right, here's the census. It's 5. Like, that's it. like it's literally
that people weren't coming back.
Yeah, I thought it was literally going to be like Cain, Abel and Goldie.
You're saying that's an underwhelming number for the entirety of Dream?
Yes.
I don't know how to gauge it. Clearly, anybody who is a citizen of the Dreaming is kind of special and magical. So mm-hmm. I'm sure those people are relatively uncommon.
Yeah, mm-hmm. sure. And also that just reminded me too, Paul, that kind of hints at the time passage between episodes that we don't see, which really goes back to the end of episode 5 when John in the diner affects the world. Then right in episode 6, everything's good outside. Like time passes. So I think... like you're surprised that you thought it was going to be 5, like super low number. But I think a lot of time has been going on subtly and it's mm-hmm. not really obvious. So that's why there's been enough time for everybody to come back to the dream.
I also noticed that too, with his throne room too, that it wasn't completely destroyed anymore. Like everything was looked like it had been reconstructed. Mm-hmm. So I kind of took that. Yeah. That time had passed.
Time has totally passed.
Yeah, yeah. Recreate. But the one thing I will say though, is they bring up the three, what did we call them?
Not Arcana.
Arcana. Yeah.
Major
yeah.
Arcana.
The major Arcana. And Dream obviously sees them all as threats, but he does find out about the vortex, and he thinks that the vortex will be a way for him to deal with the three major Arcana. He brings up the fact, like Lucien's freaking out about the fact that the vortex could cause a lot of issues for him, but he's actually viewing it on the positive side, saying she could actually be the one to help mm-hmm. deal with these three. And I'll be interested to see going forward how much the vortex develops into a magical character, because if she's going to be a part of taking those three things down, I imagine that she would have to be pretty strong, and she's still early on in learning her powers. So I'm just interested to see her character growth over the next couple episodes.
I mean, to even add to that random theory I just thought of about Fiddler's Green, like all of the Arcana are being gradually pulled into Rose, meaning like through Lyta and then also through Jed. And then also Corinthian directly through her. So that kind of tracks.
You're making so much goddamn sense.
Dude, I hope I'm right, man. Now that would be
she's gonna pull everyone into her. And Desire said that too, because she has pulled Dream in as well.
Yep. Yeah.
So he is pulled into the vortex. Yeah. All of the Endless seem to put respect on the concept of a vortex. Mm-hmm. Uber and powerful, it seems.
What's even crazier is what Alki just blew our minds with upstairs. Well, at least mine. I'm jumping ahead here, but the diner scene. So in the diner, we met all these characters that we thought were going to be nothing. Then we see Judy's picture in Rose's apartment, right? Right when, do you remember, when the Corinthian shows up to bang the house sitter to get the information, he looks at the picture of Judy, who's at this point dead because John killed her. But so Rose made an appearance in the diner scene. It's when Judy's like sitting outside the bathroom. She FaceTimes her friend asking if she's seen Donna.
Totally,
and it was totally Rose. Yeah. So that even kind of like makes sense at how John and Judy like came together, because it could be the vortex pulling everybody around. Yeah, right. So like nothing needs to be a coincidence anymore because of the vortex.
That's so crazy.
Was anybody, first of all, 100% agree. Was anybody bothered by Lucien's lack of faith of Dream not knowing what's going on when she grows up and is like, oh, by the way, there's rumors of a vortex, and Dream is like, yeah, I know, I'm on it, like I've been on it. Like that was kind of pissing me off. Like Lucien, he is dream of the endless. Like, he's king of dreams and nightmares. Like, you don't think he knows that there's a vortex coming around?
Yeah, I just thought she's just uptight a little bit.
I thought she was approaching the topic delicately. Just, oh, by the way, on the set. Or he might have just been saying that the citizens are starting to, like,
and she, well, that's, she her said, job,
to keep an ear to the ground.
She said, I feel there's, like, there's a vortex. You might want to look into it. And he's like, dude, I have looked into it. I don't know. This I, basically, is where, she this wasn't is where putting respect says, on his name.
I really like Lucienne, so I don't think she meant him any disrespect or thought that he wouldn't.
We're going to have an interesting conversation later, I think. but this is where he says that thing, that the rule, he established the rule. He says the endless are forbidden against taking any action against a mortal that is not an active threat. And then love she it. Says that whole thing about, yeah, like, what if she becomes active? I agree. I think she's not handling the transition of power back to dream as well as I would have thought, because I agree. I think the endless are so far above any of these beings in the dreaming that I would just, whatever you want to do, dream, I'm in. I feel like you're the guy, you know. So I'm more like what you're saying, Paul. Like, I think she should have more faith in him, but at the same time, she was in charge for 100 plus years by herself. So
yeah, in charge
both
of
sides have it. Yeah, but you know.
I have not gotten the impression at all that she's struggling with the handoff power. Maybe that's just me. I have only gotten loyal sub or loyal, like, right hand man.
And so let's go into this next scene, in this, the last scene of this bucket, which is after we find out about the dream vortex. We have Lucienne and Matthew plant, because it's decided that Matthew's going to go to Earthrealm and follow around the vortex, right, and be the eyes for the Sandman. So when they have this conversation in the next scene after Matthew, I think Matthew, this is before Matthew goes to Earth and the pumpkin Merv shows up.
Yep. In the library.
Yeah, in the library. This is the part where it didn't sit that well with me, where Merv says that everyone knows that Lucienne's the real one, the real person in charge here. And then if you get any information, Matthew, you should tell her before Dream. I didn't like that.
I think you guys are putting too much on Dream, because he, like, tasked her with the senses. So clearly there's stuff that goes on in the dreaming that he is not, like, otherwise, why the fuck would he have her running around getting 11,000 people's name and story down? Like, so clearly he can't just snap his fingers and know anything. So she serves a purpose and seems to be loyal to him.
Yeah, no, totally. I totally agree.
She defends him all the time, backs him up all the time. She's like the one that stayed when everybody else left. Don't get me wrong. I definitely think she's most loyal. I just don't think, it almost seems like she believes that Dream is rusty. Like, she's not completely.
Yes, that's a great way to say it.
She believes she's not completely up to the task of ruling, and because he's been away for and trapped for so long, and he's like, relax, I got this.
That's exactly how I view it.
I would add to that he kind of is rusty.
Yeah, also, but at the same
which brings us back. I think she was just approaching the topic just delicately.
I think Merv brought up an interesting perspective that a lot of the people or beings came back for Lucienne, or I mean, sure, they came back for Dream. I'm sure they were either scared or, like, happy to have him back, but Lucienne at the end of the day was the one who was around for 100 years keeping things together. So I like the perspective that a lot of the dreams of the dreaming have more respect for Lucienne than they do for Dream. I like that perspective, honestly, personally.
Merv was crazy, man. I did not see that coming at all. The CGI fucking pumpkin scarecrow thing just walks onto into the library. That came out of left field, but it was awesome because it just shows you how crazy the dreaming is.
Yeah, definitely. And he was, like, a knowledgeable person too.
Yeah. I hope he comes back.
He seems like he's huge in the material, like the source material.
Just keep an eye out for anything strange, said the talking pumpkin to the talking raven. Like, okay.
That was awesome.
I gotcha.
So I think we can move to the next bucket, which is going to be all of Rose's stuff. But this kind of keeps them together. We're going to pick back up with what Matthew does directly after this. But the transition of Matthew going to Earthrealm from that scene with Merv was pretty cool, right? Like, going through the painting. Yeah,
him flying off, like.
Yeah. Showed us realm jumping.
Yeah. If you could be reincarnated as anything across the spectrum, from a dung beetle to a god, like.
Raven's definitely.
Dream hopping Raven, who is like. Dream's right hand man is pretty top tier. That's especially for someone who is painted as a bad human in his life.
I'd want to be reincarnated as the worm in Dune.
Giant worm.
Yeah, it just eats everything.
CinemaSin, still never seen it.
Whoa, really?
Neither have I.
We should watch it.
Yeah, is that our plan after this podcast?
I haven't seen Interstellar either.
Oh my god,
I haven't seen it either.
What?
Slap the shit out of it,
dude. What the?
There's always two. Paul, what have you not seen that we can watch together? Have you ever seen Godfather?
I've never seen, and Emily actually yells at me all the time, I've never seen Remember the Titans.
Wow. Okay. That's a great one. Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't know how you avoided that. I feel like we watched that in elementary school. Yeah, that was a public viewing.
Strong side. Come on.
We watched it in the cinema class.
You're embarrassing.
I don't know. We watched it in our cinema class.
Did we do Remember the Titans?
I think so. Or it was around that time in one of the classes.
It's a great class.
Whatever. We're getting off track.
Side track.
All right. Let's go to Rose because. If you didn't know, like I said earlier, she was already introduced back in the diner episode, and indirectly her ancestor, which was the craziest connection back to early Sandman episodes, was introduced in episode one. So what we're going to cover now is Rose's introduction and then the 7-year time skip when she split with her brother all the way up until she meets Unity. Unity Kincaid is her name.
Yep.
And this is the girl that fell asleep in episode one. Like I never ever would have thought we were going to see this girl again.
I specifically remember seeing the dad in episode one going, Unity, like, wake up.
Yeah.
And just thinking, wow, like, what an unfortunate girl, but like, we'll never see her again.
Yeah.
And then it turns out she's the sole survivor. Like, that is insane.
Yeah. Not really a lot we need to get into with the background of Jed and Rose and how their parents' relationship like caused us to be where we are 7 years later.
They divorced. Now. The father demanded the son. The mom took the daughter. They were separated forever.
We know also Rose is 21-year-old, you know, doesn't have a job. So that just kind of makes it a little bit more difficult to go out and find her brother because she doesn't have the money to be able to look for him.
Right. And then we just skip ahead to this fake interview about her family history that Unity set up to meet her in Sussex. So
caretaker
that's
Lyda, who is a character.
She's fucking beautiful.
Yes, but she could be the queen of a land called Plot Lines I Could Care Less About. Her love story with her husband, just like, I don't want to watch you fall in love with. And like, I guess it made more sense because they're driving home like that they can get pregnant. But like, what is this? Like a it's 90s green. I know. But like, they took so much time establishing the love. And I'm just like,
I don't think anybody would just be able to get pregnant. I'm with you. I agree. I wasn't crazy about her character plot line, but I don't think anyone would be able to just go out and have a dream of being pregnant and then have it happen.
This is too intense for it to just be anybody. Yeah. I think something is going on because
she's very close to the vortex that it happened.
That's totally what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or she has a special part, but I'm with you, B-Toms. Like, when we're on the plane and she looks over and she's talking to this guy, it's like, okay, whatever. And then we have the dreams of them constantly like having a life together in dreams. It's like, yeah, I get what you're doing, but I'm not crazy either.
I'm worried that they're spending so much time establishing the love story between them, because at the end, it's like only people who really love each other that passionately can possibly do this, which I have too much respect for the show to think will happen.
I think that she's probably a big character in the comics because of anytime you get a full name like that and they focus on you so much, I'm assuming that she has a really like important source material character. That's the only thing I can get at. And plus, I do think it's going to be building towards something, which
is
Fiddler's
Green. Character
and
the Fiddler's Green makes me like it a lot more. Yeah. So
we might look back and it'll be okay.
Just too much love story when I wanted other stuff on the screen.
I'm with you. I agree with that.
Comments are moving on.
If Kathleen was here, she would have been like, dude, this is the best.
She would have wanted more.
Okay. So some other things that happen in this journey where she's meeting her great grandmother, right?
Mm-hmm.
We get another unexpected, the Fates scene, right? Like the third time that the 3-in-1 or whatever they call them in this universe come back and they warn her about the Corinthian, Jed and Morpheus, all this stuff. So we can talk about a little bit of piece of that. And then we get the Unity giving Rose the gold amulet. And then last, it's just the rest of it is her going to the Airbnb and meeting all these new characters. So this is everything else that happens with Rose in episode 7.
The subtitles gave us a cool little tidbit here. So the Fates are split up into what seems to be the Maiden, the mother and the crone, I believe, is the third one. So the maiden being the youngest looking, the mother being the
second youngest,
obviously middle-aged, yeah. And then the crone, you know, being the old crone. Mm-hmm. So that was really cool that we got some specification there. And yeah, they're just kind of inserting themselves everywhere. I guess
it was a crossroads.
Like,
why they showed up.
Okay. They're cool. And they gotta be, they're just getting dropped in here and there because I feel like they gotta be huge to the plot line, you know, like coming up either this season or next.
They were so judgmental of the questions she asked.
Yeah.
Just like, if you asked the right ones, we could have warned you about the Corinthians.
Yeah. I just love that they're just an entity that can basically do whatever they want.
Yeah. And they also, of course, they mentioned, you know, we've come here to caution you and protect you. And she's like, protect me from what? And they say, protect you from dreams and houses, which I thought was really weird. That didn't come in either of these episodes.
Well, yeah, because I mean, name of the episode. And then also the there's that whole dollhouse thing, which I'm not understanding.
I mean, just specifically tied for her, though.
Dollhouse was kind of a representation of Unity's story. She was gifted it for her 12th birthday, and Rose comments how it's in pristine condition, and she said, well, I only got to play with it once because then I fell asleep forever, but the dollhouse survived in pristine condition.
So what she said was she fell asleep and she had a whole life in her head, kind of like Rick and Morty episode, right? That video game where they like live a whole freaking life.
Yeah. It's what Lyra and her husband are trying to do right now, just in dreams.
Yes.
Yeah. She had a life.
Yes. It was the endless sleep. She's the only one. She's the sole survivor of the, what's it called? The sleepy sickness.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, yes. So that was just, to me, that was such a good like connect moment to back to episode one. I just, Unity, whatever, she might have dropped the fucking ball with telling Corinthian where her great granddaughter was, but still a cool character to bring back in to connect us back to you know, the Burgess time period. Gold amulet, anybody? What the fuck?
Yeah, I'm not, I have no takes on that. I don't know anything. Like, is it do we think it could be like a vestment of someone's?
It ain't nothing.
Yeah, it ain't nothing. That's
all
sure.
I know.
I mean, the fates or the... No. What was it, the fates or a dream that she saw amulet before?
She said she had a dream about it.
Okay.
I think it was on the plane or something. I don't know, but...
Okay.
We have no guesses for that yet.
Yeah,
fine.
Even dream references the gold amulet with his conversations with Lucien at the beginning when they're talking about the... I keep thinking three calamities, but the major...
That's what it was. Yeah. Dream said the amulet.
Yeah, he mentions the amulet, so it still goes over my head. I don't even want to begin to guess where that's going to go.
So let's move to the Airbnb, right? That's the only other thing that happens in the episode.
Yeah.
And this is just what a fucking cast of characters.
And the diner, like the short diner scene.
That's not in this bucket.
I thought you meant like we're done with the episode. No, we weren't going to bring that up. Okay.
But this is just the craziest cast of characters. We got Hal Carter, who's the Airbnb owner. He is just the Broadway performer, eccentric leader of this group. We got Ken and Barbie. We got Chantel and Zelda, I think.
Yep.
And then Gilbert, who we don't meet at this time, lives in the attic. Mm-hmm. But at this point, Matthew's kind of hovering around. He sees what's going on. He knows. But yeah, what any comments here?
I thought Hal was a really funny character, just another small comedic relief character who could also provide a little bit of seriousness, I guess, or, you know, advice to Rose in her time of needing someone. So I thought he was a really good character. It was just an oddball house, like he had described it. I mean, you got the two sisters slash friends who...
Slash girlfriend slash whatever they are.
The mystery makes it fun. That reminded me of the Terlisi twins or whatever from high school.
Yeah, but yes, you're absolutely
inseparable.
Right.
I just, like he said, it was just an oddball crew of people. And honestly, if I had walked in that house, I would have been like, I did not sign up to be a part of this.
They were all nice enough.
They were nice
when
though,
you talk
absolutely.
To them. Though, I'd be like, oh, that's not so bad.
Yeah.
There, all it was I don't know why, like how this got so much screen time. I guess these characters may come back into play more besides these two episodes, maybe not. But it ends up with the whole house wanting to go out to Hal's performance. And at the performance itself is just like a couple minutes, whatever, on screen, just kind of highlights what kind of character Hal is. But the more important part here was that Rose takes a call and goes out into the alley. And we find out two things. One, she can kick some ass. She can fight. Like she can handle these people that are trying to mug her. And then two, we get to meet Gilbert, who is a freaking cool ass old dude who has a sword cane. Like, he was fuck yeah.
Cool, but I've got my eyes on him.
Totally.
A little suspicious.
Totally.
A little suspicious.
Only other person with a sword cane I know by name.
Would you,
Lucius Malfoy?
I was literally going to say Lucius Malfoy.
So you already know I'm a little sus of Gilbert.
Is there any chance that Gilbert is the prodigal?
Oh my God! Put it on the board right now. I don't even. Yeah, I don't need any more discussion.
Let's just put it on.
That's already perfect because he was just like a little mysterious. I wouldn't necessarily say I was getting good or bad vibes from him. He just wasn't. He didn't show his true colors in my mind. He was just overly nice in a situation that I think he needed to be, but I would have liked to see if Gilbert could have done some damage there, you know, see an old man in action.
Like, he was ready.
Yeah, he was ready to go, I think.
I don't know if you heard that, but Gilbert could be the prodigal on the board.
Whoa, I like that.
Because were you getting weird vibes from him too? Like, yes, he was a good guy. He helped out Rose at the end of the day, but he came at the right time. Just a little weird.
Man, my off-the-cuff theories today, they're good.
Yeah, I want what you're having today. Yeah.
it's free. It's upstairs.
Yeah, the whiskey's got it going.
Okay, so let's get to our last bucket here before we cover the final scene of the episode. And then this is going to be the one that I don't think any of us could have predicted. This is the bucket of Huntsville, Alabama, and it's going to be the fan club of the Corinthian, also the serial killer, like just like admirers. I don't really know how to describe these guys, but this came out of nowhere for me. And it's just crazy because they love they're three random, terrible people that are clearly serial killers. One, I think, is like a child killer, the guy, right?
Right.
And then the girl who seems like she's like the most calculated. And then there's like the bumbling old guy who's trying to lead this conversation about them planning the, planning to find a guest of honor for their collectors meeting, which I'm guessing is just like a collection of people that murder people and take trophies.
Yeah. My big question is, are these real serial killers or are they nightmares that are following Corinthian?
They're people because of the way that they react to Corinthian being 130 years old. They're like, you're the one that has the mantle right now. They don't believe that he could have been that old.
Okay. Wow.
Real people.
I didn't even look at them as real people.
And they think he's a real person.
Yes. They don't think he's the OG Corinthian from 100 years ago.
Because I say like you heard he passed off the title, like the new Corinthian or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
This was pretty wild. I wasn't expecting this. And how they go about luring him in, I guess, was predictable when you have three serial killers that just go to copy him.
Mm-hmm.
And do they succeed in this episode? Does he show up to the diner?
Yes.
So the connecting scene that happens to get him to go to the diner or when he realizes it is that scene that I was mentioning earlier where he goes to Rose's apartment and sees Judy's picture after he bangs the housekeeper.
Banging which the friend, yeah.
I would have put my life on the line that he was going to kill the dude after.
Same. Oh, I would have. In the moment, I was totally thinking, all right, this guy's dead. I would have put my bank account down that he was going to die.
So I guess the Corinthian himself is a serial killer. Like, that is the nightmare. He's just a serial killer with mouths for eyes because he let Unity live, too. I was a little like, oh, what's he going to do with Unity? Mm-hmm. But he was just going for information. He was like super charming, which is what they say serial killers do. I don't know if any of you guys have seen Mindhunter.
Oh, love it.
Rest in peace.
I know you've all seen Mindhunter. I wasn't really asking, but they say serial killers are really good at blending in. Mm-hmm. And everybody says he's super charming. Like, he completely schmoozed Hal, the landlord.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was definitely expecting him to kill, the house sitter when the house sitter went back for seconds.
Yeah.
He was like, you sure don't have time? I thought he was reaching in his shirt pocket to get the blades out.
Dude, he even said, can we do it without your glasses this time? I was this guy is dead.
Yeah, he grabbed his hands quickly. I do want to say the theory is still alive at this moment where, you know, Corinthian needs to be invited in. Like, he can't just barge in. You know, he knocked on the door guy did let him. There is a scene coming up in episode 8 where, you know, I'll talk about it. It is questionable. Mm-hmm. But as of right now, theory's still alive.
Yeah. So taking us back to this diner, though, like, it wasn't a lot of screen time, but at the same time, I was super invested by the second time we come around, because now you understand what's going on.
Yep.
Like, they're trying to recruit the Corinthian to come be their guest of honor. And we didn't get anything in episode 8. So I don't, how's that going to play into it? But
I think it's just building up a faction. Like, there are a faction of people out there that are willing to follow the Corinthian. Nah. Like, it's not going to be just him.
So we do see that Corinthian is indeed on board to be the guest of honor, but he wants to bring the Vortex. And she has a dream jumping ability for people in close proximity. And he said, I know how to take all of our, they're talking about their dreams, all of our cumulative dreams to the next level.
Oh my God.
So she's going to be jumping through all of these serial killer's dreams, which is going to be the most horrifying shit I've ever seen in my life.
Probably, what if it's the opposite, where Corinthian wants her to help all of these random serial killers bring things from the dreaming to Earth?
Correct. Like, yeah, either or. Yeah, but either, that's going to involve her traversing their dreams, I think. It's like us having to see them.
It's like what Stan in South Park, the forest critters, what are they called? The Christmas critters?
Yep.
It's going to be that. They're all going to just have these psychopathic dreams, and Corinthians going to be like, all right, let's make that shit real and just bring it.
Yeah, that's what I'm envisioning. And I do, now that I'm talking about it, I did look at the name of the next episode, episode 9, and it was, I can't remember it, but it was something to do with the collectors.
I think it was called The Collector.
Yeah, so it's going to be total. And that makes sense, because where we leave episode 8 is them on their, like, they're together. He has Jed, who I'm sure he's going to use to lure out Rose, and then that's what's going to happen.
Was this the same diner that was episode 5? Was it just a coincidence that it was also called Mike's Diner?
Okay, maybe it was the same. I don't know.
I don't know. I was just wondering, because the layout of the diner that the collectors are in was very similar to the one. And even in the background, it says Mike's Diner. And I was like, wasn't Mike the guy too?
Vortex, that
was,
man.
Yeah. I mean,
it could make sense too, because remember how you were saying last podcast episode that Bette had the Southern drawl, and this is Alabama.
Well, also, it's the same.
I-95, boom.
Yeah, I mean, maybe.
Yep.
Why would you, I would not go back to a diner that, well, I guess they don't, no one knows.
The whole world would have been massacred.
And if you were a serial killer, you would.
Oh, yeah. If you would want to return to the scene of the crime kind of thing.
We nailed it.
They probably were like, oh, this diner is full of death. Like, new meeting spot. Let's go. So it's possible.
All right. So let's take her home with the last 5 minutes of this episode. And we're back in the dreaming. And this is Lucienne. We kind of talked a little bit about it already, but this is Lucienne reporting to Dream. They talk about Jed, how actually we didn't even mention this too, is the opening of this episode gives us the answer, Paul. And I think you nailed it, of what the books in the Royal Library were. It's like all of people's dreams, because he was reading in the opening Rose's dream journal and reading some of the things that she had in there. And then when they talk about Jed here, they say like, okay, he hasn't been connected to the dreaming in a long time, and everybody, every single one of the humans are, because they spend a third of their life here. Like, this is a huge part of their existence on this plane. So all of that was just, you know, just queuing us up for the next episode, but it was good information to transition us there.
And we know that Galt has the ability to sever people from the dreaming, because I think Lucienne asks, or maybe it's vice versa. Maybe Dream was asking Lucienne, but do you think she has the power to sever people from the dreaming? And I think Lucienne is the one that replies, I do. Mm-hmm. So pretty strong ability straight up. If that already gets you clear off of Dream's radar. So that's a pretty good power to have, I would say.
Yep.
If Dream can't locate you, then who the fuck would be able to, you know? So that was.
And then Rose actually shows up, because she jumped into the dream
by accident. Yeah, yeah, totally by accident.
Quick question. Do you think if Dream put on his helm, he wouldn't be able to like just search for Jed? Maybe that was only his ruby that he could like see. We don't know the powers and extent of his tools and whatnot.
I think it might have more to do with the fact that if he wasn't connected to the dreaming, he wouldn't be able to do it. But if he was, potentially, because I think he can find anybody. Couldn't he find Rose if he want? He did. He finds Rose. So maybe you can.
Well, technically, she finds him.
But after that, I mean.
Oh, yeah. But after that. Yeah.
I don't know. I just take it as, you know, Galt somehow completely, whenever Jed goes to sleep, just takes over and doesn't go to the dreaming. It just goes to Galt.
Yeah, like if you don't sleep, Dream would never be able to find you. And if you're severed from the dreaming, then same concept.
To jump forward a little bit into episode 8, you know, Dream is saying to Galt, like, you just wanted your own realm where you could give. So that totally explains it. It was almost Galt had its own realm where Jed would go when he would go to sleep instead of going to the dream.
She probably could have built that up. I mean, she was so focused on Jed, but I think in my mind, she could have probably built that to be bigger. Like, she could have taken another, quote unquote, taken another kid, brought him into this like kind of mini realm and
let's
grow it from there.
Pin in it, because I totally think it's worth talking about Galt's character at the end of this episode 8. But I think that's all the other thing we get the intro into what's going on with Jed in real life and Barnaby and Aunt Clarice. Yeah.
Hello, so, Clarice.
We don't talk about that yet because there's not, we learn it all in the next episode anyway. But are we good with episode 7? I think we made good time on that one. That was a fun one to talk about. But this one is going to be a little bit more chaotic.
I hated this episode in the sense that I felt so bad for fucking Jed. I hated it.
So we're not going to have traditional buckets like we've had basically for the first 7 episodes of the season because of how much jumping around and what the vortex does is kind of makes this not linear. So we're kind of going to wing this and see how it goes. Hopefully it doesn't take too long.
Never works for us, but we'll see.
Just to set the expectations for our first part of this conversation, we're going to go through everything up until when Rose is going to start seeing all of the Airbnb people's dreams.
So when Rose goes to sleep and meets up with Dream,
everything before that. Yes. So the first like half hour of this episode is kind of just a little chaotic and it's hard to cover. And I know if you're listening, like, you've obviously already seen it. So we're going to bring up some things here, but it's going to be a little less organized than what we've kind of been going through. So with that being said, Paul, take it away.
So the end of episode 7, we actually got Rose going to sleep and then kind of waking up in the conversation with Dream and Lucien. And so starting off episode 8, you know, we got
Lucien. Titled? Playing House.
Shit. Fuck. Episode 8.
You're cut from the podcast.
I didn't have it. So we actually get Dream and Lucien's initial reaction to Rose being in the dreaming in the throne room immediately. Mm-hmm. And Lucien is like, yo, check yourself. You're in the presence of the dream of the endless, like in his throne room. And Dream is like, you know what? I think she should stay a little bit. Lucien's trying to get her out of there, saying like, you need to leave. And and Dream is like, you know what? I'm a little interested in her.
Yeah. Lucien was totally just, you could see that she was a little worried in the moment, but Dream was open arms, was like, come here. If you want a hug, I'll give you a hug. You know, he was willing to show her and kind of direct her on the right path, at least a little bit early on, and try and use her powers to help him out. Like I said in the last episode, with defeating the three.
Yeah. What Dream says to her is, like, you know, first of all, how did you find me? And she goes, you were talking about my brother. Sorry. She was saying, do you know where Jed is? And Dream was saying, no, but, you know, you do interest me a lot. And maybe we can find him. And to go, like, Dave, what you were saying, that's when they were like, all right, you know what? We're going to set a meeting. When you go to bed tonight, me and you are going to help find him.
Yeah. And I like, too, how Dream is kind of implying that she just kind of stumbled here. And he's kind of egging her on, like, you know, sure, you don't know where your brother is, but you didn't know where this place was and you came across it and you came across me. So let's kind of use your power of being able to just kind of dream hop around, as well as my ability to just like locate all beings, and we'll kind of knock this out. So I like that he's kind of pushing her in the right direction with her powers.
Mm-hmm. And we also see, so Dream says, you know, I don't know where he is, but I know who has him. And he goes to the stained glass windows and shows Galt up there. And Rose is like, oh, like that's who has him. Mm-hmm.
So before we talk about like that transition into seeing Galt for the first time, the other quick thing that happens with Lucien and Dream is I think Rose leaves and they have a conversation to themselves talking about Unity and how she was the sole survivor of the sleepy sickness, the only person to ever live from it and wake up. But we get some cool, just like high level information here. He says like dream vortexes are incomprehensible. They come around like once an era, I think he says. And then he also says vortexes are not caused. They just happen. So I don't think if it like boils down to it, like desire, I don't think Desire put this part into motion. Like, this must have been just like a naturally occurring phenomenon in the universe, and it's not going to be like a part of a bigger plan.
Well, it almost seems like he's trying to convince himself that that is the truth, because Lucien brings up the possibility, or I think he even contemplates, so is it possible that I brought on, that I caused the birth of this vortex by being gone for 100 years, suggesting that presence not being there, making Unity go into the sleepy sickness, birth, whatever, is what caused it, so that there was a traceable reason to this.
Okay, you're right. That went over my head. I just watched this episode 30 minutes ago.
I mean, it seems like, there's obviously not that much information on vortexes in general. So I think even they are still kind of learning about them themselves. And so maybe in the past they've thought of it as they just happen. Mm-hmm. But now that they have kind of some weird coincidental events that are happening that cause this, maybe there is something that causes vortexes to appear.
Yeah, sure. I was totally getting what you were saying from Dream earlier, saying they're just completely random. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no cause. So all I could think about is what would happen if Dream was still imprisoned when a vortex appeared. Like, anybody could just hop on and Dream would just like be fucked.
Pretty much. Mm-hmm. Then we get Galt, right?
So let's do all of Galt and then all of Jed's stuff, and then we'll pick back with all of Rose's stuff that leads up into her dream jumping from all the Airbnb people. Because, after that throne room scene, I think that's when we see Galt for the first time, right? We transition into Galt.
She's the guy in the chair.
We see
Galt in her main form.
Holy fuck, man. 10 out of 10. That Galt is the coolest concept ever, and just... the CGI work that they did for Galt was incredible. I was blown away by how she looked.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I love that.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, galaxy we were talking about earlier. It seems like the galaxy. It's like a Rocket League skin just chilling on her torso and chest.
It really is. Yeah,
it's really cool.
I was so pleasantly surprised by Galt's character. This especially with the ending.
But. This introduction was crazy with her being the guy in the chair and Jed becoming a superhero after we had just seen him get. Brought back to Barnaby's place, kind of in chaos. So I'm watching this scene. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. He becomes a superhero. And then when he uses the fucking sands, I was like, what is even going on right now? Mm-hmm. Like, it was so cool watching him use it. And it became a cyclone around him. And then he's teleporting around. I thought it was really cool, but I was so confused at the beginning. And then it obviously clicks that once the rats come out of the sewer, and they're kind of attacking him, that he's just in a dream because there's a rat that's actually kind of biting him in real life. And that's what causes him to wake up.
I think this is a perfectly good time to talk about Galt as a character, because we were hinting at it when we were talking about episode 7. But Galt is just like a nightmare confirmed, but a good nightmare, pretty much like the polar opposite of Corinthian, where she has her own goals that are not about hurting anybody, but she just wants to give humans hope rather than fear, which is very... that's a very respectable goal. Like, she's not a bad entity. Mm-hmm. And just the way that she is trying to make her own version of the dreaming is super cool. And I thought she was going to be a hard villain, but she likes Jed. Like, she wasn't giving him any fears, because she has aspirations and dreams of her own to actually be someone that's good. And just this whole thing, looking back on it after you get the end of this episode, it's just so much better. Like, she is, Galt's a great character.
She had so much sympathy, which is crazy for a nightmare.
Dream could learn from her.
She reminds me, it sounds crazy, she literally reminds me of Wreck-It Ralph, right? Like, she is a bad guy.
Bad guy.
But she's not a bad guy.
That's a great comparison.
She literally was born to be a nightmare, to be a bad guy. But now that she has more understanding of who she is and her circumstances, she's like, that's jumping ahead. She's like, I don't want to be a bad guy.
Yeah, I don't want to be the bad guy. Wreck-It Ralph, baby.
Can you say, can you call that, getting in touch with your humanity? Would that be considered humanity, even though she's a nightmare?
Probably, yeah.
I'll allow it, yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Thoughts on Galt?
I really liked Galt, yeah. What was I just about to say? It was... something to think about, the moral dilemma that Dream went through, and they're establishing him as someone who's a stickler for the rules and is very black and white in their interpretation. So like you guys were saying, in his eyes, a nightmare is a nightmare, always going to be a nightmare, and has to be a nightmare. Mm-hmm. So when he, which by the way, the CGI of him just overtaking her with the shadows was pretty cool.
Oh. Oh my God.
But then there's silence and he looks over at Lucienne and it's just like, you think I was too tough on her? And she's like, well, yeah, I kind of do, honestly, because like you guys already talked about, she is a good guy, it seems.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But let's go back to Jed, because this is his part of the story where we just kind of get how shitty his life is in this foster care. And I feel like that was kind of predictable, because when they said that, the foster care parents were friends of the dad who was already kind of like a jerk to Rose and Rose's mom. I was like, that's not like credibility that you were friends with the dad who wouldn't let the siblings be together.
Yeah. And the chick's like, the one chick at the adoption center or whatever is like, oh, I'm sure he's totally fine. Yeah, it's like,
Rubio.
Yeah. It's like, who are you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, she gets her come up and
just thought that
later on. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I heard Luke saying that this foster dad is his favorite character.
Like, all of TV, not just this show.
Like, this foster dad is,
he played a very good, shitty foster dad. But
yeah, oh my God, this guy is like, he should be a fucking nightmare,
dude.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if like Jed wakes up and goes, this is all a nightmare, because this dude is like that evil.
If we can just go into it with that, like with the note scene.
Yeah, because we're gonna kind of integrate it with how all Rose's stuff. But yeah,
Jed's life is shitty. We get it. So we don't need to dissect too much. But when the adoption lady comes over to Barnaby's place, mm-hmm. and everything, and Jed's kind of twirling the note in his fingers, trying to find the right time to deliver it, and he gets it in the purse, I'm sitting there like, fuck yeah,
me too,
no issues about anything. And then later on, the guy's like, I will literally break every bone in your body over this note.
Unbelievable.
And it gets cut. It cuts to the next scene with like Dream or something, or Rose maybe. And I'm like, no fucking way. We're going to get back to this kid. And he's going to have every bone in his body broken. I was going to freak the fuck out. But the suspense from this show makes me feel very uncomfortable, because I just want things to just happen and be over with. But the buildup for Jed's story was killing me on the inside. I was so worried for him.
And this is for $800 a month.
Yeah. Over.
Insane.
Get a job. Yeah. Job, you bum. It's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? He's like, I'm not gonna let $800 walk away. I'm like, get over yourself.
And for what it's worth, Clarice seems like a somewhat moral person.
She
was going to help him escape from Barnaby at the end of episode 7.
You can't blame her, because obviously she is so terrified of Barnaby. And I mean, yeah, I think any one of us would be with that much intimidation and power. So like, you get stuck in that position. She knows, we can tell from her reactions and everything, that she knows what's morally right. She just doesn't have the willpower to be able to do it. And that's just because Barnaby has crushed both of them to the lowest level.
Yeah. The way the father, Barnaby, literally negotiates with Jed, he's like, the foster agent is going to come over, and if you're good, you can sleep in your own bed tonight. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
It's like if you're bad, you're getting your hands like wired to the
pipes duct or something.
Yeah, it's like, holy fuck, dude.
Yeah. And the reason why the foster agent went by, we're going to cover Rose and Lita's storyline later, but Lita goes to the foster agent to apologize and was like, hey, you at least know that Jed is safe. And so after Lee leaves, the agent picks up the phone guiltily, you know, and calls.
So, and I think we get into it if you're ready.
Yeah, we can just go right into it.
I just wanted to say that the Barnaby, when he gets the call that the agent's coming to check up on Jed, he looked like he could have fucking murdered anybody in his path. He was like, well, tell her no. And I was like, dude, if I was Clarice right now, like, I totally understand why he didn't say anything, because he looked like he was going to murder.
Right.
He's a good actor, but the character itself is so shitty.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, the line was, your aunt and I were very impressed with how you were handling with the lady. Or what was it? It was your
very impressed.
Very impressed with how you snuck that note in her bag. Yeah. And I was like, no,
please,
please, no. But I don't need to talk anymore. Yeah, it was so fucking depressing.
It's uncomfortable to talk about a lot of Jed stuff, but you know, that gets us to the point where he's basically, you know, being threatened his life. And then we're going to pause there, because the next time we're going to get into it is the Corinthian, and then Rose's escapades to try and save him. Mm-hmm. So let's just open the floor for anything that happens with Rose up until, again, the point when she's going to meet Dream in all the Airbnb people's thing. So not a lot happens, but whatever you guys want to bring up with Lita or Rose.
I feel like so much screen time has happened with Rose this episode, but not a whole lot, you know, actually went on story wise. I mean, I don't know. She gets the flyer. She's trying to put like all these, have you seen me, you know, missing, call this number, all these flyers out. And the Airbnb guests, you know, they all go and say, hey, I'm going to help spread these flyers. And even the Airbnb host goes, what's his name?
Hal.
So, you know, we get them going out and spreading these flyers, and this is where we kind of get Hal's backstory about, you know, Broadway, and I moved back here when my grandma died. That's why I did the Airbnb.
We also get a little bit more of that love story that B-Tom so much loves. We see Lyta, and it's the only thing I guess I would say that's interesting about that dynamic is that I forget the boyfriend's name.
Hector.
Pretty much has a life of his own in the dreaming. Like he says, they talk about how she disappears when she wakes up, obviously. And he talks about all these projects that he does when she's not there, like building their dream home and, you know, renovating the house and everything. So I just find that it's interesting that he continues to have a life. Like it's like she goes off to her 9-to-5 job, she comes home, and then they're kind of living their life together. So I just wonder if it's the vortex is so strong that she's able to kind of do what Dream does in the sense that she can create these people and have them have lives around them. Because I don't know if everyone in the world is dreaming about the same person every night and living a life with them in their dream. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I just wonder if that's the power of the vector, the vortex here.
Could be a Fiddler Green thing.
So could be a Fiddler Green thing. You're right. Yeah.
That was the theory I kind of just came up with off the cuff when we were talking through this stuff. But what I originally thought, like before we started recording, was I thought that they said that what Rose's ability as the vortex was that she can pass between realms. So I thought that there was a chance that she, because she was so close to Lita, that she helped Hector pass through the sunless lands of death back into the dreaming, which would have made them all connected. But I think it's the Fiddler's Green. Dude, seems way more right.
You are on one today. Well, now,
I mean,
I'm throwing
that one in the trash. That was the one I had my notes because I thought that when we were watching the episode. Mm-hmm. But I think I talked myself into the other one.
The Fiddler's Green, I'm with you, I think is the more reasonable one. But I definitely like that idea that if she's able to pass through realms,
she could help people pull other people through different realms.
Because
that would make sense.
Pretty fucking alive to me. Agreed. Like he was very aware of everything that was going on. Like, he was admitting also, that this is a dream and things. Like,
another thumbs up for that theory is the fact that I don't think Fiddler's Green could impregnate Lyta.
But then, yeah, you're right. You're right. But is the impregnation impregnate?
Or maybe he could.
Maybe he could. But is the baby thing going to be a coincidence that Unity also got pregnant when she was in the thing, or is this?
I'm drawing that parallel until proven otherwise.
Seems too coincidental.
Correct.
To be honest, with the Unity thing, I got that as when she was sleeping in the hospital, somebody raped her while she was asleep, and then got pregnant. I know that's horrible, but I thought it as
because she said everything I experienced when I got married to the dude with golden eyes was fake. Except for the baby, I found out that actually did manifest.
Yeah, she does explain that everything in her dreams didn't come true besides the baby.
Well, did she have a dream because she got pregnant in real life?
I mean, it's not out of the question Jed woke up from a dream about rats to having a rat on him.
There's a lot of things that could be going on here, but I agree. I think there needs to be some connection to the dual pregnancies while they were dreaming.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was on the same train that Lita literally got pregnant because she pulled in this baby from a dream that she was having.
The vortex pulled it into Lita's dreaming, like into her?
Lita was dreaming it, and then the vortex pulled it into real life because Lita was around the vortex.
So many questions.
So yeah. I know. So, but then I go into that, and I'm like, all right, if they do a DNA test on this baby, what is it going to be? Is it going to be just
half
Lita?
Rose.
Or is it going to be like...
Rose, half Lita.
Oh my God.
But no, there's just so many unanswered questions that we just have no way of knowing for sure.
It's fun theorizing though, like, because I'm not gonna lie, like a lot of this is starting to, you know, there's gotta be answers to these things. They're not just gonna leave these open-ended. We're gonna get them. So anything else that happens before we have this plan, it's just Corinthian stuff, right? Because
he gets pretty much the knowledge of where
he kills Ms. Rubio.
He kills Ms. Rubio
the
from the
agent person.
But that happens after he does the thing where he goes to Unity.
Yes.
And he's sitting right next to Unity, finds out she's in Florida, goes to Florida, finds out about these. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So yes, exactly. Goes to Unity, gets the name of Cape Kennedy. Cape Kennedy goes to Cape Kennedy and is about to walk up to Rose. But this is when Rose is dishing out flyers. And then goes to talk to Matthew. She's literally hysterical. She goes up and talks to a crow. And he's like, nope, that's a crow. I'm a raven. Common mistake. It's okay. I thought that was great. But then while she's talking to Matthew, the Corinthian walks up, sees it, goes, oh, shit, and turns around.
Which was awesome.
I love that he got scared whenever he saw, like, you know, dreams influence anywhere.
He's still scared of Dream, which is just awesome. The king of dreams. Yeah. Be. All right, if we're ready now, we're going to finish out the last, I think it's 15 minutes of the episode.
Yeah, the only thing I think we didn't say is when the Corinthian was going to see Rose, he actually walked over to Hal, who was passing out the flyers, grabs a flyer from Hal after flirting a little bit. And I was like, Corinthian, you dog. That's so the second dude you're about to bang this episode. So from the flyer, I guess on the flyer, they say, like, if you have any information, call this number, blah, blah, blah. For some reason, though, I guess because he knew Jed was on foster care, he went to the foster care agent's office. And this is where, you know, he pulls out the flyer and goes, have you seen this boy? And then, you know, shit happens. But this was actually the biggest, dagger in my theory of Corinthia needs to be invited in. Because she did open the door and he kind of like grabs it as it's closing coming in, but she doesn't really, you know, open it for him and invite him in.
He already got into the building though.
That's what I'm hoping, you know.
Off screen. Yeah. Okay. I said it, not you.
The foster building has a welcomer that opens the door for you when you come in. That's what I got. So.
All right, so let's go through the dreams, though, because now the whole plan is the next time that Rose goes to sleep, she's going to meet up with Dream and help find the little brother. Mm-hmm. But this is just a
first dream we get.
Wild chain of scenes of her jumping between all of the housemates. And I don't know if you guys want to bring anything up specifically, but the first one being Hal, we get a nice little Vecna scene. Where are you caught up?
Oh, I'm caught up.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? A little Vecna.
Know what you're saying. That was just so, I was not expecting that. I was just like, oh, we're in his dream, but it turns nightmare real quick.
Well, I think they did a good job of trying to subtly show what these characters would be dreaming of. It seems like with all the information we got from Hal, like he doesn't know really like who his real self is. Yeah. Like he wants to be Broadway. He's down here like doing this thing. So I think that's what that was symbolizing.
Yeah. He was saying the whole backstory, you know, if Broadway called, I would fucking leave this house in a second and go to Broadway. And then in his dream, you know, he was like, oh, like you're not good enough, you know, sweetheart or whatever, saying like, I don't know if that was his internal monologue saying you'll never be good enough for Broadway. That's why you're stuck doing these. But, you know, that was straight up nightmare shit the way he pulled the face.
Oh, my God. Another thing just clicked with me, too, is right when she goes after Hal, she goes directly to Lyda's dream. Right. Mm-hmm. And she sees them. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's Lyda. And then the Zelda.
She sees Lyda banging Hector.
Yes.
So that's the only reason she got pregnant, I think, is because she was there when they were banging.
Yep.
That has to be it.
You need to drink more whiskey. Your brain is sharp right now, my friend.
That's totally what it is.
Good stuff.
That is perfect. Love that we're connecting these dots. And then we get Zelda.
We were
connecting the dots.
We were here.
Each of the house guests notices Rose too, which I'm not sure if that's going to come into play, but they'll be like, why were you in my dream?
Yeah, they're going to be like, I had a crazy dream and you were in it.
Zelda was that's like what reading. That's what,
No, I think that was the other sister,
Chantel.
Because Zelda's Zelda the graveyard. Yeah. So Chantel's the next one we're seeing where she's actually talking about the fact that she has weird relationship with words, right? Like she was like, only my sister really understands me.
A sentence.
She's the one that doesn't
Everyone knows about right. me in the sentence.
Yeah.
She's like, I have the pleasure of reading it.
Until the Library of Congress.
Yeah, so weird.
Yeah. And there was a big Z on the book that she was reading from. So it was just all
maybe if she has a speech problem, just the fact that she was at a podium speaking in front of a crowd is like, her, like dream. Her dream. Like, yeah. I wish I didn't have that issue.
And then we got Ken and Barbie, who's
Ken's.
It's Ken's dream.
Yeah.
Ken's but nightmare. Barbie's in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just classic.
Yeah.
Just like you don't have clothes in front of you. You're in front of your whole school. You're in your underwear. It's like that, which is kind of funny because he's got a nice ass though.
Barbie's was the coolest dream. I would have wanted to be Barbie's on that. Got she was on like dreams. A quest from dream to dream or something.
The talking walrus.
Yeah, at the this, end. And then she got like
what
the,
that was.
It was the coolest dream by far. That could have been a story.
She's in the skeleton, the bones of what looks like a giant animal. And she's like this
arch of the porpoise.
Yeah. And spun from silver rose and you know, flower courts, whatever the fuck she
she's
said.
Like, but was it worth it? And the walrus says something super insightful, like, of course it was, but not first, as special as the bonds made along
first
the
of all,
way.
Why are we calling it the walrus? His name is Martin Tenbones. First
sorry.
Martin Tenbones.
Put some respect on Martin's name.
I'm so happy
name.
You had that written down because that caught my ear.
That was literally my only note of these two episodes was Martin Tenbones.
Nice.
I love how it's Barbie too. You know, you expect Barbies to be like, you know, the stereotypical dunce. Yeah. You know, they don't know what's going on. They're ditzy, and she's having the deepest of deep dreams with the
fantasy. Like she'd be our friend.
Yeah. With MTB would be our friend. Still.
So I don't know if I just like was like overthinking it, but like that thing that she was, that bubble of light that looked like Zelda's fucking, you know, the fairy that follows Zelda,
Navi.
Or that follows Link. That's so embarrassing. I said that. Yes.
Not oh
Link.
My God.
You didn't people even catch it. Pissed. So it's embarrassing. You fucking.
We just lost 10 subscribers because of you.
Listen. It forms into something that looked exactly like Dreams Ruby. It was probably just a coincidence, like a cool fantasy dream she was having, but it definitely turned into like a rock, like Ruby. So I don't know.
I literally
probably
just
nothing,
pulled up
but,
the scene and you're absolutely right. It
does. I don't know. Is that anything?
I think it could be.
I'm going to draw the parallel to the fact that Jed's superpowers were the same as Dream Sand's superpowers. Ooh, so I feel like people that are dreaming in the dreaming just use things that are familiar to Dream.
I do want to go off that and say we'll get to that scene earlier, but Dream says to Jed, oh, is that what she's told you? You're the Sandman. So I feel like everything that Jed dreams of, it's actually Galt like creating that dream.
True that.
She wants him to have a good dream.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. It just caught my eye there. But Dream actually says, this is the first time we're getting real dialogue that kind of matters here. And Dream says that something about a vortex is that you were capable of dreaming up worlds or even destroying them. And then that leads to the quick Zelda dream where she's at the graveyard. And then he explains like people dream of what's comfortable in their homes and stuff like that. So he's trying to channel her vortex abilities to conjure up where Jed is. Where's Jed dreaming of home so we can help find him? And then that leads to Jed's dream. And this is like the whole confrontation with Galt. So this is this is money. All of this is money.
And yeah, Galt is behind the TV screens as the mother right now and saying, and she actually sees Dream come up on one of the monitors. And her reaction is great because she's like, fuck, like, this is the most powerful villain like we've ever faced together.
The king of nightmares, she says about him.
And that is true. And dreams, you know, she just left that out. She omitted that.
Mm-hmm. He usually omits the nightmares when he's introducing himself. Yeah. So
true.
Just to go off what you guys are saying, Jed is in the whole Sandman getup. He has a toy ruby around his neck.
Oh, does he?
Oh, I missed that.
That
looks exactly like his. So
that's awesome.
It's basically like Galt, you know, gave him the sand, gave him the ruby. Didn't have the helm though.
Yeah, but the mask. Jed is the real Sandman.
Oh yeah, of course.
Yeah. Dude, that confrontation like made me smile so hard when they're on that street and he just says, "I'm the Sandman." He goes, "Oh, you're the Sandman."
Yeah, I love his reaction. It's just like a father looking at his kid. He's like, "I'm proud of you. You just look up to me."
Is that what she told you?
Yeah, like, awesome, man. That was so heartfelt. You never see that's the most Dream smiled this whole series.
Oh yeah. But besides with maybe Hobbs.
That's true. Which, fuck, why was he not in any of these?
Bring him back next episode right now. We need him. But Jed does find, like, Galt comes out with the while they're interacting. And Jed, in the meantime, also recognizes that Rose is his sister and is obviously thrilled to see her because this is the only hope that he has is in this dream world. And he can see someone that he knows. Like, this is huge for him. So he's obviously reacting the way he should be. But then Dream kind of wipes the facade, and this is where we get the reveal of what Galt actually looks like with that astral looking body.
How about Rose's reaction? Because Rose is like, "Mom, oh my god!" And Dream's like, "That is not your mother." Yeah. And then he waves it away, and you know, Jed is freaking out, like, "What'd you do to my mom?" And Rose is like trying to calm him down, mm-hmm. stuff like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's obviously also pressing him, like, "Where are you?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" And like, "I'm right here." And she's like, no, this is a dream, which at first I was kind of like, just tell her where you are. But it would make sense that if you're in a dream, it would take some time for you to kind of realize that you're in a dream. And then it be like, okay.
It was like partial lucidity. He was like, Barnaby and Clarence or
Clarice,
not Clarence. Clarence is a real nice man.
Yeah.
Barnaby and Clarence are going to get me. Like, Clarence can't stop him. I think that's what Jed was saying. So it makes sense that it's like almost partial lucidity.
I thought he was totally just going to wake up at the moment where she says, "Where are you really?" I thought he was just going to wake up because that would have kind of made him realize that he's in a dream and like
wake up. He screams because of this. He's like, "Rose." And he screams in real life.
Yeah.
And the dad is like, "Oh, he made noise. Like, I'm going to give him the belt."
But I was a little bit relieved because I was like, all right, confirmed no broken bones yet. So yes. I was like, okay, we didn't have to deal with that whole ordeal just yet.
Also, I was mad at Dream for that because he just shut that shit down. He's like, "All right, I got what I needed from you. Bye."
No, I don't think that's it. I think it's Dream's job to wake people up when
they. It's kind of like waking. It's like death. Yes, when it's, death,
you got to wake up when you're supposed to wake up in the real world.
Okay,
when he got the rat thing. Like,
yeah, okay, you're right.
That dream abruptly came to an end,
and maybe it does tie into what I was saying with. Because he now realized that he was in a dream, maybe Dream was like, you actually have to wake up now.
What was I complaining about? The fact that Dream wasn't pulling Lyta out of her extended dreams with the husband. But I guess if she is in Fiddler Green's domain, the same way that Jed was in Galt's, wouldn't be on the radar.
That's canon.
That's going to come up.
That's real.
Like, literally, I could see Dream talking to Rose and just being like, "Who's that?" He's like, "Oh, that's Lyta." And he's like, "I don't have any dreams from Lyta for a long time."
There you go. Boom.
So after Jed wakes up, we already talked about, I don't think any of you guys want to add anything to Lyta becoming pregnant and waking up just like Unity did. That happens here. And then I think the last like 5 to 10 minutes happen and we're back into the throne room and we have this confrontation with Galt. But did any want to add anything about the pregnancy thing? Because we kind of hit it.
No, I think we nailed it on the head with all of our theories and everything. Okay. So we're good to go.
So yeah, last couple scenes here is just Galt in the throne room. And we actually had a pretty lively debate upstairs about this. I think it was before B-Toms walked in. Or maybe you were already here. But either way, like, we're just talking about this treatment that Dream and Lucien's watching this all go down, the treatment that Dream gives to Galt, basically sentenced her to a punishment of saying, like, "You're going to spend a few thousand years of darkness." Shikamaru style, right? Like,
shadow possession jutsu.
Yeah, like, that was fucking, that was sweet. But I don't know. I thought they did an amazing job with the amount of screen time Galt got at being fleshed out as just way weird. And we've been saying this, like, way more than just a simple Corinthian style nightmare. Like, she has layers, she has aspirations and dreams of her own, and just I hope she comes back, and I hope that Dream's punishment doesn't turn her into a true villain, because it totally could.
So I wasn't, when I first watched this by myself, I wasn't too crazy on this scene because of some of the things that Dream were saying. After we had watched the episode upstairs, Luke and Paul kind of talked me a little bit out of it, but I just didn't like the word choice, I guess, is what I was complaining about, because he specifically says like, things don't have the ability to change. Like, you are what you are when you're created. Like, we don't have the option whether or not we want to be created or not, blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, dude, we saw you two episodes ago go through so much change, and you're going to sit here and kind of tell this nightmare that she can't change. I thought it was a stretch for me.
To be fair, the lesson he learned in episode 6 was, as an Endless, our purpose is our function. So he could throw that back at a nightmare and be like, you were designed to be a nightmare. And Dream has several times explained that the purpose of nightmares is to help humans overcome challenges in their real life.
To show them their fears so that they can overcome them. Yes.
Thank you. So nightmares do serve an important purpose to the dreaming. Right. So it's important that they do that purpose. Mm-hmm. I think he's being too rigid. I really hope that we see Galt again and that he kind of questions his judgment on the ruling and pulls her out of the punishment early. That's what I hope.
Before you go, Paul, I'll just say, just with how we've been introduced to characters and how, like, with Roderick Burgess and all the, like, some other characters, they're very, like, one-shotty. Just, they kind of make their episode appearance and they're done. Like, as much as I would love to see Galt come back, I don't think that, I also could see it not happening because, like we've seen in the past, that a lot of these characters that we think are going to be big going forward kind of just have their little bit of time on screen and then they disappear. So shout out to Galt. I would love to see her come back, definitely, because I think she's an interesting take on the nightmares that we've been exposed to. So go ahead, Paul.
To bring it back to Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah.
At the end of Wreck-It Ralph, you know, he did his job. He did his job when he needed to. You know, he destroyed the building for the kids when they were playing the game. But then on the outside, you know, the attitude was different. So, you know, Galt could have done, I get where, you know, Dream is coming from. Galt's got to do her job. She's got to be a nightmare. But on her off time, you know, she can drink a few beers with Dream at the pub. You know, they can be chill. She doesn't always have to be bad guy.
Galt was awesome, like front to back, like probably the most in-depth nightmare. Like, as much as we like Corinthian,
he's just straight
he's
up
way
villain.
More surface level so far until we get more. Like, Galt has potential to be a great character if she makes a reappearance, which who knows if she will, but that gives me high hopes for Fiddler's Green as a character too, because these seem like the major arcana seem like big players, and I want them to have layers and be mainstays for the show.
The other thing that's important here too is after Galt gets banished to the Shadow Realm, Lucienne makes a comment saying that she used to be something different. Doesn't elaborate at all on what she used to be, but she says, I used to be something different before you hired me to become your librarian. Kind of, I think for me, that was just, again, emphasizing that things can change within a person. So
does it play into what B-Tom's theory is, or does it not play into that about them, her being a previously being a fairy that changed into what she is now? Right.
She could be like an evil. She could have been like an evil fairy. I took it as she was trying to explain that she used to be a bad person, kind of like Matthew. And now she's in a position where she can be good and helpful and that she changed over time. So she could have been like a bad fairy back in the day.
The fact that she said it means we're going to get Lucienne backstory.
Yeah.
Which I'm excited for. She's a good character.
We were asking for this when we met Cain and Abel. Like, we want these backstories. For sure. Yeah.
And she drilled home that we all change. So I just really love that quote at this time for Dream too, because Dream also, you could see it on his face after he banished her that there was a little bit of sympathy for Galt in the same time, because I'm sure he knew what he was doing wasn't entirely right. But I think Lucienne is just a good voice for Dream to be around and just have someone give their input at times.
Good advisor. Mm-hmm. Good, because we're in the last scene.
I was going to say, are we ready to hit it?
Yeah, because the only other thing that happens is we kind of already referenced it slightly, where Corinthian shows up, murders the shit out of Barnaby and Clarice, which is good. So he doesn't discriminate against good or evil people. He'll murder you. You know, he eats their eyes and shit and then leaves with Jed on his way to, I'm guessing, the collectors. serial killer convention to pull Rose there.
We did skip that earlier. We did talk about Corinthian going to the foster agent's office, but then a little bit later, we do get a scene of him just chilling on the desk, looking up Jed's information. Mm-hmm. And then we see him grabbing an eye and then going to chew on it.
Yeah, he's snacking.
Yeah. So I just want to again reiterate that I want the CGI of him eating these eyeballs with his eye mouths.
I love that scene. It was so good. His little yeah, so
the
creepy.
Blood dripping right into the paper.
You had said it, Luke, but I actually think that they're, I hope, maybe this was me just being hopeful, but I was hoping that Clarice somehow made it out of there and the only person that got killed was Barney.
Nah, I think they said two bodies. And
they did mention
the reason we get this perspective because Rose shows up and then also Matthew, which is the equivalent of Dream.
Of course, it was like five minutes too late too, of course. Mm-hmm. You know, if she was there 10 minutes
earlier.
You
don't know that though. You don't know how, you don't know how much time's passed. But either way, I think we did these two episodes justice. Rose is going to be, I think she's going to be a mainstay for multiple seasons. And then, you know, I'm still kind of in the mindset where Corinthian is going to be the season finale death.
I hope he's like a long-term bad guy because he is just so good.
I just think Desire, we have Lucifer, we still have the creator, God, whatever. And then we have Destiny. Like we have so many bigger players than the Corinthian that it would be cool to see someone as little as a Nightmare rise to the level of Endless, but I feel like he could be a 1 to 2 season kind of.
He's just so part of the dreaming, and this season has kind of shown us that it's focusing on Dream's perspective on life and everything, and so the Corinthian would make sense to be cut off at the end of this season to continue for bigger things.
He's so charismatic, and like the last scene of him just driving off in the Mustang and Jed being like, so how do you know my sister? And the Corinthian just being like, I don't, but I'm looking forward to meeting her. Yeah. I'm like, oh my God, that is so, like, it's the truth. It's almost like he can't lie. He's telling the truth, but like, it's just a vague version of the truth.
So let's do this. Like, let's just go around the table. Next time we're podding on this, it's going to be, we have watched the whole first season. So I want to know, like, what do you guys want in these next two episodes? And I did just kind of start us there with saying, like, I don't know if I think or want, but I think the Corinthian is going to be like there's going to be a final Dream versus Corinthian showdown in episode 10. But throw some things out there that could be hopes or, you know.
I guess one for me would be Lucien / Fairy backstory, maybe just getting a little bit more in depth onto what role those, like Abel, Kane, all those guys, what their actual role is. If they're fairies or if they're just like dreams.
I would like to see the realm of despair and desire. I feel like that's a reasonable thing for the next two episodes outside of
the gallery.
I feel like there's a realm and that's like his castle.
Sure.
That's his throne room. So I would like to see his realm, what they got going on.
Desire. Do you think there's like a bunch of sex dungeons everywhere with like BDSM and
probably
probably
a room for that.
I mean, when she got hype, she just started digging a fucking cut into her cheek.
Oh, for despair. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's gross.
Yeah. I mean, that's just nuts.
Paul, you only have one answer here.
What?
Hetty. That's what I was going to say. Hetty. I wanted to say it, but I was going to save it for you, but
thanks, bro. I want to see Hetty come back. I want to see like how humans can become like Hetty, you know, and magic. I want more humans dealing magic and more behind that. Like, can anybody do it? Do you have to be born into it? Is the lineage come into play and all that fun stuff?
So
let me get
in that same
Hob in that category.
Well,
too,
in that same, bad. Oh, well, oh my God. Yes. Yeah. Hob better be.
I want more of Hob in these next two episodes.
He better be in one of these two episodes.
I want Hob to start using magic. That would be fucking.
But in that same Mortal vein, like, are you saying, are you under the impression that Burgess, aka Tywin, was only was he only introduced to magic because of desire, or do you think like he just picked it up because he was like he was in a cult? Are you saying like
I don't think desire.
You want to know more about how humans can get involved and integrated in the magic world.
Yes,
but do you think that Burgess? I know it's pretty obvious at the beginning of episode 7 or this one, either one. When Desire says the plan was like Burgess was supposed to be a distraction, did he instill, did Desire instill all of the magic into Burgess, or was that also, or was that kind of like a combination of the two?
My initial thought is a combination. Like, Desire sought out a very strong lineage, like magical users family, and the Burgesses were one of those strong magical users. So he was like, all right, well, how can I manipulate this guy? So he killed his Desire. Son.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I was going to say he killed That's his crazy. Son. Desire somehow killed Roderick's son, his first one, and then killed the book owner's first son and was able to get them to meet by getting rid That's of those.
Totally.
Two.
That would be possible amazing. That Desire purposely killed the son. So Burgess would have a more of a reason to get into magic and look into death and summoning Endless.
And the butterfly effect of that resulting in Ethel and creating John. And like, that would be insane if it was like all planned out like that.
Yeah.
So Desire and Despair's thing, they were talking about how Dreams always thinks his realm is better. Were they trying to merge realms? Or was I making
No, they
that?
Said that they have, they share a realm.
No, I'm saying, were they trying to like take over Dreams' realm? Did they say that was their goal?
No, I don't think so.
Or they're just trying
I think they're just emphasizing that in their eyes, Dream is very selfish and just conceited and very about himself and is willing to like flaunt that to the others.
I'm a simple man. I just want Joanna on the screen. And then I also Joanna Constantine. And then I also really hope we get at least one more scene with Lucifer, Brienne, Tarth. Like, I want to see her one
I
more
want
time.
One to go off that. I want one more like big magical battle. Like, we got kind of one in Lucifer versus Dream a little bit. But I want to see people like slinging spells or like magic at each other and like a whole CGI scene of that.
So I'm hoping it's too early. I don't want Desire and Dream to even be on the screen together yet. I want that to be a build up.
It could be the season finale.
Totally was going to say the opposite. I want a bunch of the Endless to be on the same screen.
Like, that's like a round table of Endless.
They don't, it just a meeting of two more than. Two Endless at a time.
Let's get a family luncheon. Like, you know?
Oh man, put Death back on the screen.
I would love to see an Endless dinner, like was referenced in Six.
Dude, I want Death back too, now that I'm thinking about it. Like, I would love to see Death, Hobbs, Joanna, and Lucifer. I want to see all four of those motherfuckers back.
That's definitely on my bucket wish list for the end of the season.
Wish list done. I think this is as good a time as any to wrap it up. That is our episode 7 and 8 coverage of Netflix's The Sandman. I do want to take this opportunity once more to shout out the official Reddit community of the show, our Sandman. If you like Reddit, go to them. They have great conversation about the show, of course. And as always, if you like what you heard, give Bingetown TV a follow on Twitter and Instagram. Visit us on BingetownTV.com and subscribe to our show on Spotify, YouTube, the Apple Podcast app, or wherever else you may find your podcast. Once again, we are Bingetown TV, and thanks for listening.
Exit Light.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.